my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. And this is Eddie J. from Porterville. And I ask him, where does he go when things get rough? He says, I go to God.
That's good. Yeah. Hi, my name's Eddie. I'm an alcoholic. I want to wish happy birthday to all the people. At least got another day of life. I came over here about 5 years ago. They asked me to speak, and it's been a while. Anyway, I was like a lot of people. I got started drinking when I was young, and about 12. And when that happened, for me, I was set free. I didn't care anymore. Wasn't real good at home. And, you know, school went out the window. Everything went out the window. The day I turned 17 years old, I was a senior. I'd been in school about a month, and I'd flunked out for the last 2 years. And I got on a bus, and I left, and I went to Fort Ord and joined the Army, and was going to go to Vietnam. And I was there about 60 days, and we went to Hawaii, and then from there we were going to ship out. And I did the same thing that I'd done my whole life. I came home for a 30-day leave before we left, and I never went back. And went to work at this cotton gin, and come home from work one day, and the FBI was sitting there in front of the house. And this guy, I told him my story. Anyway, he said, well, if you don't want to be arrested by the FBI and have this record, then you got to turn yourself in. So I went over to Fort Ord, and they were going to give me another chance and send me to Texas. And, you know, I'm a drunk. They said that, you know, I'd be in the brig like 60 or 90 days. And I thought about it, and I just said, no, I'm not going back. So they put me in jail, and I stayed there for about 30 days and got out, came home, and that was another thing that I had always regretted to this day, was quitting. Anyway, after a few years, I got married, and we started a family, and nothing stopped. I kept drinking and doing other things, and after a while, we had two little girls, and after a while, my wife had had enough, and she left. And so I stayed drunk. And I worked and I went places and I never stuck around much. And I did that, and then I got married again and started another family. And I got to see my girls from my first marriage every once in a while. And, you know, I was drunk the whole time. I worked every day and I got drunk every day, and that's the way it was. And when I got 35 years old, my second wife, Jennifer, had kicked me out. And I started this business. And the guy I was doing business for said, you're going to have insurance. So I went, and this buddy of mine was the insurance carrier. And Randy signed me up on this insurance. And I, one night, you know, I was lonesome and feeling sorry for myself. And I thought, man, I'm going to get my life cleaned up. And over in Exeter, they used to have the Exeter Hospital. They had a place called Parkside, and it was a 30-day program over there. So my insurance was going to pay for this place. So I went in there, and I was there 30 days. And I thought that as long as I didn't drink, that everything was going to be wonderful. So they were teaching us about the 12 steps, 12 traditions, a higher power, sponsorship, AA meetings. I didn't hear any of that. All I thought was just don't drink. If you don't drink, everything's going to be okay. And so I went through the 30 days there, and I got out, and I'd started that business, and there was plenty of work. But like I said, I didn't pay attention when I was there. I just thought, don't drink. So I dove into the work, and you know, I worked 7 days a week, 12, 15 hours a day. You know, I couldn't drink, and there wasn't nothing else to do to keep my mind off of it. I'd been a drunk my whole life. So anyway, I did that, and I did it pretty good. I didn't see the kids. You know, I was sober for 10 years, and I didn't see the kids grow up around me. It was actually, now when I look back on it, it was more miserable for my family that 10 years, I believe, because I wasn't there. You know, I was working all the time, and when I wasn't working, you know, I was asleep. But, it, you know, I wasn't a father. At least when I was drunk, I was gone, you know, and they didn't have to put up with me, you know, because I was quite the dry drunk, to say the least. Anyway, that went on, and business did real good, you know. After 10 years, I got a call from a buddy of mine overseas, and he said, Eddie, said, why don't you come over here and give us a hand, and, you know, we can party. And I said, well, John, you know, I don't party anymore. I don't do that. And he said, well, you know, just come over and give us a hand. Well, I knew, you know, the guy had, I don't know, probably 20 employees. And, you know, he didn't need my help. He was wanting to party. So I thought about it for about 2 weeks. And, like I say, I didn't hang around people like myself, you know. I didn't go to meetings. I didn't have a higher power. And after a while, I finally convinced myself that, you know, I'm going to be on the other side of the world, and nobody's going to know. So I told the wife, I said, well, I'm going to go over here and work, and then I'll be back. And I was gone, I don't know, about 10 days, 2 weeks, and I was drunk every day. The day I got off the plane there, we got drunk, and I was drunk every day. And after the 2 weeks were up, I thought, we partied that last night, and I thought, okay, tomorrow I'm going to be flying home, so I'll get up in the morning, and I won't drink anymore, and nobody will know. So we partied big that night, and that morning I got up, and I went down to the airport there in Guam, and it was about 2 hours before my plane left, and I got to looking at the schedule, and from Guam we were going to fly to Hawaii, and in Hawaii I had to spend the night. So I thought to myself that morning there at the airport, well, I'm going to spend the night in Hawaii so I can get drunk today and nobody will know tomorrow. So that's what I did. I drank from Guam all the way to Hawaii and drank all that night. And I thought, now in the morning, I'm going to get up and go home. And so I won't drink in the morning. Well, the next morning I got up and I went to the airport and I looked at the schedule. And it was going to be like a 4-hour flight. And then it was going to be a 3-hour drive home from Los Angeles to Porterville. So I thought, well, you know, I'll just quit drinking when I get to L.A. And nobody will know. So that's what I did. And I drank until I got to L.A. And then I got off the plane and I thought, you know, I'll be all right. And I got off that plane and I got to my car and I thought, shit, it's a 3-hour drive home. So I can have a couple. Nobody will know. So I drank on the way home. Anyway, I hid it, you know, for a while from my wife. And then one day, my wife said, you smell like alcohol. And I said, well, yeah, I said, you know, I've had a couple beers. I said, you know, I'm 45 years old, and I figure I'd be able to have a beer every once in a while, you know. She was, yeah, okay. So anyway, about 4 years later, I was, I don't know, 155, 160 pounds. I was dying, to say the least. And one day my wife came and she said, I want you to take this test. And I said, well, why would I do that? You know, because something's going on. You know, you've lost all this weight, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, I said, no, I said, I'm not taking no test. So time went by, a week, 2 weeks, whatever it was. And she come again. She said, you need to take this test. And I was so screwed up that I said, well, sure, I'll take a test, no problem, you know. So I did, and she came back with the results, and she said, you know, they said that you should be dead. And I said, well, what they did, they mixed mine up with somebody else's. And she said, well, maybe they did, but your ass is going anyway. So anyway, we battled for a while. It was just a cloud. I can't, you know, remember. But anyway, after a while, you know, I finally admitted, yeah, you know, I got a problem. And so I said, well, you know, I quit once before. And so I know I can quit again. And so I tried going to the meetings at the Elks Club there, the early morning meetings in Porterville. And the problem was I'd do it on the way in and I'd do it on the way out. You know, and I, man, I just couldn't quit. And so I finally, she got me, I got talked to this lady at another recovery home. And she said something that, she asked me, she said, you know, she asked me all these questions. And I answered her honestly. And she ever asked me, you know, are you suicidal? And I said, well, no, I've never been suicidal, you know. She goes, okay. She said, well, if you'll come down here, you know, get signed up, you can stay here for 30 days, blah, 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 get cleaned up. I said, okay. So I left about 6 o'clock in the morning, and it was about a 4-hour drive, and I got there the next morning about 1 o'clock in the morning. And I was sitting on the desert over here on my way there, and I thought, you know, if it had been, I don't know, 12 hours, 13 hours trying to get there, and I thought, if this is not suicidal, what is? You know, because I know I'm going to die. You know, I mean, my heart is about to explode. I'm going to die. Anyway, I got there, and it took about 3 days for me to, I mean, I didn't sleep 3 days. It took about 3 days to start seeing what was happening. And I was in this meeting, and there was about 6 or 7 other guys in there and this counselor. And I'm looking at the wall, and I see the 12 steps and the 12 traditions on the wall. And I thought, you know, I've seen those someplace before. And the counselor asked me, he said, what's going on, Eddie? And I said, well, I've seen that in sayings someplace before. And he said, well, because you have to tell them your story when you get there. And he said, well, you said that you were in a recovery home once before. And I go, yeah, you know, about 14, 15 years ago. And he said, well, did they have it on the wall there, Eddie? I thought about it, and I thought, well, that's where I'd seen that, you know. But I never paid attention to it. I just thought, if you don't drink, you know, that everything's going to be okay. So anyway, I was there for 30 days, and I did everything that they told me to. And I paid attention, and I... One night I got down on my knees, and I'd never prayed to God, ever. And I didn't think, you know, that he wanted anything to do with me. You know, I wasn't a good person. And they told me, said, you know, you're going to have to get your higher power. You're going to have to surrender and realize that you are not in charge. You cannot fix yourself, you know. So I did. And I asked God to just give me one more chance. I was I went in on October 20th. And October 23rd, I turned 49 years old. And I asked him, I said, God, give me another chance. And, you know, this time I will do what they tell me. I won't, it's not just about not drinking. So anyway, we had a family group. My son came. My wife was there each time. And they told me, they said, we've got this program that we want you to do for you to get out of here, you know. You've got to agree to all this stuff. And I told them, I said, I'll do anything. You know, I don't want to live like I lived my whole life. When I was a kid, I lived in fear. When I started drinking, I thought that I wasn't afraid. I just didn't care anymore. And the truth was that I was scareder than I ever was, you know, my whole life. When I quit drinking the first time, I thought that if I don't drink, that my life will be good and my family's life will be good. And it was not, you know. So I told him, I said, I'll do anything. I don't care, whatever it takes. You guys tell me what I got to do. And so they set up this program for me. And they said, when you leave, we want you to get you a sponsor. And I said, yep, I'll do that. And they said, we want you to go to aftercare. And they found this place, Cahuilla Delta Aftercare. They said, we want you to go there for a year, once a week. I said, I'll do that. They said, we want you to go to a meeting every day for a year. I said, yep, I'll do that too. So anyway, I came home. I agreed to everything, and I came home. And right off the bat, I asked a friend of mine if he'd be a sponsor of mine because I needed a little help. And he explained to me that I needed a lot of help. And I said, okay, I'll do whatever it takes. And I started those aftercare meetings at Cahuilla Delta with a little girl named Tracy. And when we got there, there was seven or eight people in the group. And I told them my story. And at the end of the meeting, we were having to pay for this aftercare, you know. It wasn't free. Anyway, at the end of the meeting, this little girl, Tracy, gave me this stack of cards. And she said, I want you to get these cards filled out at every meeting you go to. And it just pissed me off. And Tracy said, well, what's the matter? And I said, well, you know, I'm paying for this program. This, you know, I shouldn't have to carry these cards. And she said, well, Eddie, you said you'd do anything. And I said, give me them cards, Tracy. And I took my cards, and I got my card signed every day for a year, every meeting I went to. And I went to a lot of meetings. I went to meetings in Visalia, Tulare, Bakersfield, Porterville. And they told me, if you go to all these meetings, that you will find your meeting, you know. And I went to my meeting every day for a year, and every time somebody asked me to do something, I did it regardless, no matter how stupid I thought it was. They asked me, they said one time, they said, we want you to go over to the 12-step club in Porterville on a Saturday morning, and we want you to pick up all the tables and chairs, and we want you to bring them to Visalia over across the street from the Cahuilla Delta Hospital, and we're going to have a mini prasa. And we want you to bring all the tables and chairs over there, and we want you to help set it all up and get it cleaned up. I said, no problem. And that's what I did. And I got over there, and me and another buddy of mine, Joe, and we unloaded all those tables and chairs, and we cleaned up the place. And they told me right before we got finished getting everything ready, they said, we want you to come back tonight, this mini process, and we're going to put on a skit, and we want you to be in the skit. Now, I don't know what a skit is. So I asked them, I said, well, what's a skit? And they said, well, it's a play, and you're going to be in this play. I said, well, I really don't want to be in no play, but I'll be here, you know. So I showed up, and I'm standing up on the stage with about 500 people out there, and I've got this little shark head on, you know. And I did my part in the skit, and at the end of it, this friend of mine, Julie, said, what's the matter, Eddie? And I said, well, that's got to be the dumbest thing I've ever done in my life. And she said, really? That's all the years you were drinking, that's the dumbest thing you've ever done. And I thought about it for a second, and I thought, man, I was glad they invited me to do this skit. Because it was nothing compared to some of the shit I did. Anyway, they asked me to be the CSR for one of our meetings, and I did that. They asked me to be the chairperson for our men's meeting, and I did that for a year. They asked me to be on the board over in Visalia, in Exeter, central office, and I did that for 2 years. And for about the last 10 years, they've asked me to pick up the barbecue pit and bring it to the park at Mooney's Grove for our annual barbecue. They don't ask me to do as much stuff as they used to. But if they ask me, I always do it. It doesn't matter. You know, AA has gave me a life. The 10 years that I was sober and didn't know anything about AA, I wouldn't trade in one day for that 10 years. I have people that call me, that care for me. I have people that know that I will be there for them. I've been able to be there for my family. I couldn't do that before, ever. Even the 10 years that I was sober. I've told people, you know, it's not about the drinking. Not for me. I know, I honestly believed in my heart that I could go over to Guam and I could get drunk and nobody would know and that I could come home and be straight again, you know. I'm not that person. I'm the kind of guy that they tell you about that one is too many and 100 ain't enough. I want mine, I want yours, and I will die, there's no doubt. And I will bring everybody around me down while I'm doing it. I cannot have a drink. Today I know this. I believe and I tell people that God has gave all of us another chance. That's why we're here. I've known 15 people personally since I've been clean this time that went back out, are dead and gone. Friends of mine that we've buried that should not have died. They were the same as me. They couldn't have just one. And they couldn't get back, you know, just like I know I won't be able to get back next time. My family, I've learned so much this time. You know, I learned, we were at my grandson played that roller hockey over at the the skating rink here in Visalia years ago. He's in college now. And we all went over to watch him play. And we were standing there. And my son standing beside me. And he's a grown man now. And I said, well, this is really neat, you know, how they got that, go out there and play this roller hockey. And my son said, yeah, I used to do that. I go, no, you never did that. Oh, yeah, Dad, I used to do that. I never knew it. I decided years ago that we were going to raise chickens and have our own eggs, fresh eggs, you know. And so I went and ordered these little bitty baby chicks, and I got them, and I was trying to figure out how to raise these chickens. And my son went, "Here's how you do it, Dad." And I said, "Well, how do you know how to raise chickens?" "Oh, I used to have 100 chickens." I said, "Well, you never had no chickens." "Oh, yeah, I used to have chickens, Dad." You know, I missed everything. I missed my daughters growing up. I missed my son growing up. And I was sober while I was doing it, you know. I talked to all my kids once I got straightened up this time and apologized. And to me, they told me, they said, you've got to forgive yourself, you know. And I thought that that was a cop-out. You know, how dare me be able to forgive myself for what I've done, you know. And they said, "Well, if you don't, then you can't go forward," you know. So I did. I thought about it, and I wanted to do whatever it took this time, you know. I wanted to have a real life. I wanted to be there for my family. And so they said, "That's what you've got to do." That's what I did. And you know, today things are completely different. You know, I've got health issues. I've been thinking about trying to semi-retire, and I still go and see a therapist, talk to this guy, you know, and it helps with everyday things. You know, I've got a living problem. Nobody taught me about how to cope with problems. You know, I was one of those guys that fight or flight, and drank my feelings away. I didn't know about feelings. And now that, you know, I want to be a better person for my family and for myself. Like I say, I believe that God gave us one more chance, and I want to make the best of it. So whenever I'm asked, like I say, I try to be there for somebody, or to come out and speak, or just to drag the barbecue pit over there, whatever it takes, you know. But that's about all I've got, and I sure appreciate you coming. Thank you.